Hi, welcome to another episode of the Finnish Football Show. Thank you for joining me and Mark and Rich for episode 2. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, Rich.
Hello.
Before we get started with this week's Huukajat chat that we've promised you, I just thought I'd give a couple of stats from the first episode. We were really impressed with how many people tuned in. And we had sort of 30 to 40 people watching us sort of at any one time. I just had a little look at the statistics, and we had like 125 people watching in total during that first episode, and 111 replays. So, you know, I think the very first thing I need to do is give a bit of love to my co-presenters here. And all the rest of you listening, you can see on the screen, in the bottom corner of each of the little pictures is some hands like that. We're not worthy hands. So if you like what you're listening to, click on the hands and give us some love. It all came rather late last time, but you can do it all the way through the show. We don't mind at all. So remember also, hang around to the end of the recording. We'll do a little bit of off-the-record chat. That'll be stuff that's just for those of us that are now listening and watching live. It won't be included in the podcast. And who knows where that might lead us to. I think last time, as soon as that started, Mark cracked open a beer. So if you want to see a man drinking beer, then, you know, hang around to the end. You can make some comments on the screen. On the right-hand side of the screen, you can make comments and ask questions while things are going on, or use the fantastic hashtag of FFS2, and we'll try and pick up those questions and comments on Twitter as well. The podcast is coming in a few days' time, and it won't take as long this time as it took last time. It's always a bit longer to get the thing set up in the first place than the following episode, so that'll be there pretty damn quickly.
And can I jump in as well? So on Twitter, on the hashtag FFS2, I've also put out what's my kind of preferred starting 11 for the Iceland game next season, next September 2016. So if you want to check it out, go there for the hashtag FFS2. And then if you want, reply, send me yours. Let's see how it looks.
Now that picture is beautifully geeky. What did you use, the original Football Manager, to put that
together?
Football
the soccer, isn't it?
Boom. That's right. 1994. Bang.
It's great.
That's one for the teenagers.
It looks like the Teletext TV website that you see people putting the league table and the football results on Facebook. So good work. Good work. Thanks to everyone that watched us last time. We've had a lot of kind words afterwards, and I've received at least one gift. Did anyone else receive a gift from our adoring audience?
Gift?
Yeah, I don't know. Did anyone send you any gifts, or was it just me?
I mean,
it's difficult to tell. I get a lot of underwear in the post, generally.
I wouldn't want underwear from any of those guys that are watching us now, I'm sure. I'd just say then to Keke, thank you very much. He sent me a little fanzine that he's written for, so that was, that was very nice and good read.
Copy of Stand, was it?
The Stand, it was, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
So how about we crack on with this week's episode? We promised a bit of talk about Huukajat, but first of all, thought we would each of us just pick out a news story, something that's been going on in the world of Finnish football over the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks. So, Rich, we didn't get any word from you beforehand of what your news story might be. Do you have something for us?
Work was one of those crazy things today. It's today was sort of, you see the groups for the Liga Cup for the new season. They've changed the format again. And the League Cup in Finland is basically, for those who aren't watching, it's only for the Veikkausliiga clubs, not like the English League Cup, for example, where there's 92 teams. These teams, they split into groups. This year, it's two groups of six, isn't it? And there's two or three home games and then two or three away games. And then the top two teams go into semi-finals and a final. It's notoriously difficult to see how things go as a result, because it's played over about 2.5-3 months. You've got last year, I think, did Lahti win it last year? Hoyko won it last year, didn't they? But in the past, you know, the teams can field trialists, and it's all, you know, you hear these strange exotic names who once played in the English League Two or someone in Scotland. Asikov won it recently. Yoyoko won it about 3 years ago, and then promptly got relegated. So it was...
Inter won it as well not too long ago.
Yeah. So that kicks off in January. That's one of the most sort of... That gets us warmed up nicely for the new season and the start of the Finnish Cup as well.
Yeah, I've always thought of it as being a bit of a warm-up competition for the whole season. It's sort of indoors and before the season, all over pretty much before the season starts. So, but it deserves some respect in itself. It's silverware, and I think that nowadays we should be taking all of these cup competitions as seriously as each other.
Yeah,
gets you into Europe, doesn't it?
I'm not so sure about that. Maybe not that one.
Yeah, but you know, it's a good sort of see where the teams are shaping up. A lot of them have started doing their business early, and a lot of them leave it to the last minute. You see, it's a very interesting, and you would never dream of using it to predict how the league table is going to go. So it's. It's something a little bit different, anyway.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And what about you, Mark? What caught your eye recently?
Well, I wanted to talk about Kasper Hämäläinen, because he's on fire in the Polish leagues. But I'm going to have to bench him, because did anybody see the Europa League draw today?
Same thing. Bits.
So the knockout round for the Europa League draw put Midtjylland and Tim Sparv against Man United. and for those in the podcast, that was a get-in moment. Molde play Sevilla, which is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Joona Toivio, against Gary Neville. In his new job, which I think is brilliant, because it's one of those things that you look at it and it's kind of, I feel a bit like, probably like Wimbledon would do in the FA Cup. Because especially Midtjylland, they've picked up that's a huge draw. And Man U at the minute, they've not won in five. They're not setting anybody alight. Van Gaal's getting a bit of stick. I just think that if there was a time to play Man U in Europe, this is it.
And Rich, I saw that you tweeted about it earlier, and Ollie in the message room there has said that Tim Sparv is a Man United fan.
Yeah, Tim had tweeted last week after Midtjylland got through the group stage that he really wanted Man United. When I spoke to him, we did an interview, I think it was at the end of last year, and he talked about how he was a big Manchester United fan, and he's already had that return home when he played Southampton in the qualifying round. And now he gets
He wanted Southampton in the qualifiers for the Europa League, and he got them, and then he scored that absolute thunderbolt. So, one more time, Tim.
I'll be wanting his lottery numbers anyway.
The one thing that caught my eye, I must say that last on the first episode, I made the point of saying to people that they should check out Rich's blog, which is escapetosuomi.com, and also Mark, you called yours a fan site, which is fcsuomi.com. And since then, I've spent a lot more time on there, being a loyal new friend. But also, this is helping me learn about Finnish football. I've been over here a few years watching Asiko and not really paying much attention to what goes on all around me. So this is good for my education as well. So thanks for that, guys. And I'd suggest that anyone else who is less well versed in Finnish football should head over there, you know, every few days, certainly to Mark's site, and see the news that's coming through. We get these little updates on what the Finnish players overseas are up to, and that's it's good to watch that. The news story that caught my eye, actually, I got it from Ule News, from the state broadcaster. And it was about Moshtag Yagubi, Mossa, as we talked about him in the last episode about his football ability. And we talked about what he's been doing for Rops and whatever. But there was a story in the news just in the last week or so about Mossa saying that he's been playing for the under 21s and he's had some experiences with racism generally in society, not necessarily in Finnish football, and it's making him question whether he wants to play for the national team.
Oh, hang on.
Dog. That has nothing to do with Mossa or the. For those listening without visual, the studio has been invaded by a canine.
It has. I think I'll cut this out of the podcast, and we can put it in as a blooper at the end.
Sorry. Dog saw a fox in the garden.
Okay. I think I would behave the same way if I saw a fox in the garden as well. Just a different kind of fox.
Yeah.
So I was just saying, Rich, about Mossa and his comments about not knowing if he really wants to play for the full national team because of the experiences he's had in society over here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame because he's obviously a very talented boy, and he said he'd been over from Afghanistan for, was it 9 or 10 years? You know, and while, you know, I know he's said that he's experienced racism. It'll be interesting to know a little bit more about that because, you know, it's a sad sort of state of affairs when you read the stories in the news about various asylum seeker this and refugee camps that. It'd be nice to know a little bit more about it. But, I mean, it'd be a massive shame if he did decide that after, you know, 10 years in the country, he wanted to actually play for Afghanistan after all.
Particularly with the way that the national team actually responded to the crisis. I mean, if you remember the end of the campaign, it was the games, I think, against Northern Ireland when they had refugees welcome it was Faroe Islands. It was the first game, and it was organised by Sparv and by Berpa Heitamai. Yeah. So you know, there's a lot of, particularly in Finnish football, there's a lot of good intentions out there.
Yeah, you know? I think throughout the age groups, you've got a lot of players of different backgrounds, you know, that people have come from, you know, there've been an influx of people from sort of Kosovo, Albania, Yugoslavia, and various others. And it's the same with international football all over the world, where the world's getting smaller and people are now starting to get first, second, third generation immigrants are coming through and playing for those countries. You know, now even playing for England, it's becoming more commonplace.
Yeah, I think it resonated with me a little bit because at the weekend, my son sings in this kind of youth choir, and they did a series of shows on Saturday. They kind of did a mini tour of Seinäjoki, but one of those was for the refugees that are here in Seinäjoki, and they're living, I don't know, less than a kilometre as the crow flies from where I am right now, and there were a lot of young boys there, and I just thought I'm going to go and chat to them. And I went down the row. There was about 10 of them sitting down until I found the one that spoke some English. And then as soon as I started chatting, then all the others crowded round and they wanted to talk. And I just got the impression that these young boys are a bit bored and they would like to, they'd like to go to school and they'd like to learn stuff and probably playing football and playing salibandy and other kind of, and maybe in the summertime, pesäpallo as well. Actually, there's a way for the sort of sports clubs and organisations in every town that has refugees there to kind of reach out and really try and build some bridges rather than just seeing the stories that are quite prevalent in the news of sort of fires, suspicious fires at reception centres and things like that, which is not representative of how everyone in Finland feels. I know that much.
Yeah. I think it's where that's part of the thing about sport is that, you know, everyone from every country can play football, and even some of the other sports like the bandy and the baseball, they're while they're a little bit more niche to Finland, they're still something that they help people integrate. They help people sort of meet people and even pick up a little bit of the language. You know, and even AC Oulu have given a trial to a young Iraqi, to the young Iraqi lad who came over for a reception centre. You know, and you think, well, that sort of thing is great, you know, because if this young kid, you know, you'll only have a trial at the moment, but what a good advert that'll be. Someone who's come from, you know, a place like Iraq, he's come to Oulu, which is a world away, and, you know, he may get a crack at playing football.
Mrs. W's just come through the door, so my dog is now scampering around the house and growling. That'll calm down in a minute. Let's move on and maybe a little bit of lighter subject to talk about the Ukayat. And we've used this name a few times in the last show as well, and so I decided there's probably other people watching this that don't really understand where that name came from. So I did a little bit of research. So this is where I can bring something to this conversation. It translates literally as the eagle owls, and it just made me think how each of the Finnish sports teams have got their nickname, and each one clearly has a different nickname. So there's the hockey team, which is the Leonat, the Lions, and the basketball team, which is Susuyengi, the Wolf Pack, I guess is the best translation. So maybe those guys that are watching, hit us with a few more if there's any more nicknames for some of the national teams that we don't know about, but. For anyone listening that's not so well versed with Finnish football, if you hear the word I can't say it now,
Hukajat.
Then sometimes my fat English tongue just can't quite wrap around these Finnish words, no matter how hard I practice. So that's what we're referring to. We're referring to the Finnish national team. How about if we start first of all just with a little bit of a kind of summary of the Euro 2016 campaign. I think, Mark, you've probably got something to sort of start us off there.
I guess I do. I don't know. I didn't quite catch what you said, but I don't know. This, for the last qualification one, I don't want to pick the bones out of it too much because I think it's been done, you know, to death a lot. And a lot of it, I mean, a lot of the blame lands at Miksu's door. And I think sometimes maybe that's a bit unfortunate. But, I mean, when the groups got drawn back in, I think it was February 2014, I think every Finnish football fan out there had the same feeling, which was, how are we going to mess this up? Because it looked like, you know, the extended format meant top two went through, the third place team got to the playoffs. And we looked at it. I think the popular stat at the time was Northern Ireland hadn't won a competitive game in 2 years. We'd just beaten Hungary 2-1 in Hungary. I think it was maybe a month before or after the draw. Bojan Palo got his first goal. And, you know, we had Roman Yaremenko was in the Champs League. Nicholas Moisander was captain of Ajax in the Champs League. It looked like, you know, it would look like everything was rosy in the garden. And then all of a sudden, we took kind of the best chance probably that Finland's ever had to qualify and blew it away, threw it away. I mean, there's something I think fundamental in, I don't know if it's Finnish football or Finnish sports in general, but I have that. This is going to maybe sound a bit controversial, but the best way or the easiest way to beat a Finnish person is to tell him he's definitely going to win. Because if you give like that psychological advantage to a Finnish guy, they just can't handle it. If you make it impossible, if you make Finland the underdog, then they fight and fight and fight. But in this case, I think we went into the group, I think, too confident, overconfident.
And so it ended with kind of glorious failure, or maybe unglorious failure.
Yeah, it was like Mark said, you know, it was almost easier not to qualify. And when it kind of drilled it home at the weekend when you had the draw for the main finals, you know, and, you know, no disrespect because, you know, everyone earned their right to be there. But, you know, when you see the group with Hungary have come out with Northern Ireland are there, and that's Romania just from Finland's group. You know, there's Albania who'd never made it, Iceland who'd never made it, Wales who hadn't made it in a very long time. They haven't played at Euros before. And, you know, it's painful because, and it's all, like you say, it's that glorious failure, the bittersweet moment when Finland started playing well. Obviously, the big thing was Miksu going, but Finland started playing a little bit more, you know, the right way. They played the game. They didn't play a system. And it was just, it was horrible because they got the 8 points from 12 games. 8 points from four games. They were actually very close at the end, but it was just far too much in the, left to do.
The Romania game was when we went 1-0 up. Bojan Palo scored that beauty. He worked really well with Pukki on the edge of the box. Pukki laid it up and he hit it about 20 yards, arrowed it into the bottom corner. And then I think it was about 5 or 10 minutes later, something like the 80th minute, when Pukki went through and he got hacked down. Mm. And it was probably the clearest penalty in history. And it wasn't given. And then they went up the other end and then 91st minute again. One of the things that constantly frustrates me about Finnish football is how often we lose right at the death, right at the end. Like how frustrating it is to be there so close. I mean, even at 1-0, there was still a chance that results could go the other way in the Hungary game, and there was still like a really like tiny glimmer of hope that we could get through. And then 90th minute, every defender was sat on the back line, and then I think it was Moisander who dropped about penalty area deep, and the ball was dinked over the top. He played everybody onside, and the rest is history. And you think, how can we get so close? Even after absolutely demolishing our own chances, we got then close enough to get there and then still managed to mess it up again. So in this last qualification round, we blew it up twice, which I think, you know, it takes a lot of skill.
We've got a couple of people on the message board here, at Stuge, who is saying that with the current crop of players, Finland should either go with a trendy 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. And then Juspe 15, who said, I'd go with a 4-4-1-1 with Eremenko playing in the spot below the striker. So yeah, what do you think about this, the idea of the formation?
So Eremenko last year won the RPLs, the Russian Premier League's Player of the Year. And he did it playing in that. He played in a 4-2-3-1 and he played in the central role just behind the striker. And they hit a lot of long balls, a lot of counterattacks. I think it was Musa they had up front who he worked off and worked with. I think he scored 14 goals all told last season from midfield. And that's his place. I mean, that's one of the frustrations, or the biggest frustrations of Miksu's reign, was that when he played Roma on the left wing. Or then really deep in central midfield, and never put him in that kind of hole where he can get the advantage. So I think they're both right. Stjuge, 4-2-3-1 is the way that I would go. I think it's trendy, but it's also one of those ones that you can use very well for counter-attacking.
Yeah. It's funny because it's almost like these guys have seen our agenda where Euro 2016 goes on to tactics. But one of the questions out on Facebook was from our friend Elias again, suggesting that perhaps should Finland play the same system from the youth teams all the way up to the national team in the way that a lot of sort of European club sides do, or should they play with the players they've got? And you think with the players they've got, you know, they don't have the direct wingers of the late 90s with Johansson and Kolka, you know, and you've got to play to your strengths. And I think, you know, while an Arsenal or Barcelona can play the same because they can recruit and they buy players to fit their system rather than the other way around, I think especially at international football, you know, and Finland have got some very good players, you know. But Mark's
well,
got some...
I think, The best model for that kind of continuous system through the ranks is Belgium. And Belgium deployed that. It was like a 4-3-3, and they played it when they went to the World Cup in 2014, and they did well, but they fell short with a very, very good team for a pretty simple reason, is that they didn't have any fullbacks. So they couldn't protect themselves from wide areas. And so the analogy is still true for Finland. I mean, we can't, Miksu played what was the kind of his developmental football. And when Miksu started, you know, 4 years ago, that system was the one to go with because we didn't have any width, because our fullbacks were energetic and young, because we had a lot of kind of holding midfield players, and we had a lot of creativity in the top three. So the front three 4 years ago was Losa, Alexei Yaremenko, Teemu Pukki, who at the time was a number 10, more than a centre striker or a winger, and then Kappe. And those three could each play off each other very, very, very well, interchange positions. But as they got older, their abilities stopped. So Jukka Raitala, who was at Heerenveen, he got older, he didn't play. So when he didn't play, he couldn't get selected. So it was then Jari Urunen and Kari Arkivo. And as I said last time, it puts too much pressure on guys who don't have the pace or the engine to go up and down the wings. And by the same token, Roman Yaremenko came through, absolutely, you know, hit Russia by storm. And there was no place for him in that system. Or there was a place where his particular talents and skills weren't used. For me, Finland's just not, it doesn't have enough players to be single-minded. Even though single-mindedness is one of the key Finnish characteristics.
But having the right format or the right formation for the players that are available, rather than trying to fit square pegs into round holes.
Mm. Yeah.
So what was the Miksu left? What's the situation been with his replacement? Up until the last week or so, I didn't really know too much about who is Hans Backer. So yeah. And also talk a little bit about Markku Kanerva and his role in the transition to the new manager as well.
Mark, do you want to go on Kanerva?
Kanerva. He stepped into the manager's hot seat before. He's a good guy. I think in a way he was a bit similar to Miksu in that he picked basically a very narrow 4-4-2 from which he could counterattack. It was lucky that Roman, if Roman Yaremenko had been fit, he wouldn't have fitted into that system. Or he had to play out wide or then, you know, a deep line midfielder. And so I liked his tactics. His tactics did focus on nullifying the threat and then kind of counterattacking to get the best out of the options that we had. But in a similar way to Miksu, he didn't change his tactics. He didn't adapt to the games. At least if he did, I didn't really see it in the matches that I went to. And he didn't get lucky, but Joel Pohjanpalo has just been waiting for his chance to play up front for Finland. And he was banging in last season. He was banging the goals in for Fortuna Dusseldorf in Bundes 2. So it was just kind of a matter of time for him to make the step up and then bang a couple of goals in for Finland. Hmm. So he was he's a good choice, very safe pair of hands during transition. I'm kind of sort of happy that he didn't get to continue, even though he probably earned the right to continue. But Hans Backe, I don't think he's not a big departure from Kanerva. He has a similar style, similar approach.
Well, he's very much a student of Sven-Goran Eriksson, isn't he? He's certainly been under his wing for a lot of his career. You know, he was at Man City, Notts County, Mexico as well. But then he's had some success in Denmark, albeit quite a while ago. And he was at New York Red Bulls when I went to see him once. And to be honest, it's hard to, you know, nothing stood out as a result. You know, that it doesn't look like he's there for this grand tactical evolution that, you know, he's no Guardiola, he's no Mourinho in what he does. But it's almost like now he's there to work with the players that are there, possibly integrate some, you know, some new players over the course of his career. But, you know, you sort of do wonder that, I know that manager isn't really out there, but, well, certainly not within Finland's reach. But, you know, when you look at some of the names of the coaches who were interested, you know, Stuart Pearce, the guy who got sacked from Gibraltar, you know, people like that, it's difficult. And
I don't know a great deal about Bakke. I know a couple of guys in the States that remember him from when he was at New York Red Bulls. And what I got from them is that he's a really good talker. He's a really good media personality. He's kind of a calming influence. But, you know, I don't know that much about the MLS or about how Henry was after he left Barcelona, but putting him up front on his own, Iceland, and what it'll be is a Sweden and Iceland team full of kind of Nordic-based players. And again, you know, we'll see a squad that's heavily Veikkausliiga-based, but won't really be a test for the guys that are there. And for me, I can never get my head around how you'd have you'd organize two internationals. I mean, they have a deal with FIFA where they can play it, and the caps and the goals count for the players, but they don't count if you get a win. It doesn't count in the FIFA rankings. And it's, I mean, for me, it's the most frustrating because, you know, Germany's got a winter break, Russia's got a winter break, Denmark's got a winter break. In those three leagues alone, you can pick up, you know, Serie A will be off. You can pick up, you know, 10 players from the national team. You don't have to pick the guys that are in, you know, England that are playing, or the one like Thomas Lahm in Holland. You don't have to pick him, but you can pick a selection that has experience and youth, you know, and the guys maybe from the Veikkausliiga that earned their shot. Guys like Mossa, guys like Alexander Kokko, who scored a lot of goals, because, you know, we don't have a great deal of options. And you think, well, this is the time to give somebody like Alexander, to Boris, you know, the shot. This is the time to give Mossa a shot. But if you're going to put him against a Sweden B team, you're not going to learn anything. You know what I mean?
I think the issue with that is that because it's not a FIFA international date, those clubs that are on winter break, they don't have to release the players. And
I think that's fine. They don't have to release the players, but you can still call them up. You know what I mean? That's in that window. There's teams in Africa. There's teams in the Middle East that arrange friendlies, that arrange games, that make points, that count for points. Even if you go and take your A team and thrash Oman 6-0, it's better than taking a B team and watching them draw 0-0 like we did last year. And it's for me, I mean, it sort of speaks to the part of why we're not progressing as a football nation, because here's a chance to get players together and say, okay, guys, let's try something new. Let's try something out. And, you know, like Stuge, if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, I'm sorry. But he says, we need pacey wingers. We have pacey wingers. We have Mikko Ojala at VFR Aalen. We've got Riku Riski. I mean, he plays up front for Miksu, but he started out life as a winger. He's going to go back to Rosenborg, so he's not got a straight future. He needs a game to prove himself. Yeah, that's right. We need to try them out. So, you know, the first thing he needs to do is kind of go back to the Palolito and say, okay, these training sessions and what will be the squad that goes to next year's Baltic Cup, because the Baltic Cup always gets organized between Estonia and Latvia and Lithuania and us, and then maybe somebody else who doesn't make it to the real cup. We never really, again, take a full-strength team. We give guys the summer off. And for me, winning it's a mentality. You know, it's something you can ingrain in your squad. So we need to start winning and start winning big.
Is there an opportunity? When is that Baltic Cup? When does it take place?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So is there an opportunity there for Veikkausliiga players to get a chance, to put a Veikkausliiga team over there where they're in the middle of the season and peak form, fitness, hopefully?
I think they have done recently. It's been a bit of a mix of the sort of foreign-based players who are on international breaks. And, you know, they have named Veikkausliiga players there. And it's, you know, it was a fairly interesting squad for this year. And I think it was
2014.
The coach broke down. But
do you mean the team bus or the team manager?
Yeah,
Mixer. Mixer was just sweating.
Well, both probably. Yeah. But no, the team bus broke down, and they end up getting the fans coach to the game. But it's a good chance, and you know, especially as the next competitive game doesn't start until September, so you know, you need to make the most of these opportunities. And you know, the under 21s, you know, occasionally they look like they're on the cusp of something good, but then they're not ready to make the step.
But it's a backhanded, you know, kind of compliment to the Vegas Liga, because if you've got a cup where you say, yeah, okay, we'll throw the Veikkaus Liga guys in there, it's not the same as the guys who would earn. It means you create two squads, a Veikkaus Liga based squad that's got maybe a bit of youth team, bit of domestic experience, but not the big hitters. So they don't learn and train with the likes of Moisander and the likes of Yeremenko and the likes of Heitamäe. And then you've got the kind of proper team, and that's the part you've got to get away from. Because you've got to have a squad that says, okay, this is the national team and we want to win this competition. We're going to put as much as we can. And one of the problems that I had with our qualification campaign was guys like Tim Väyrynen, Eero Markkanen, unfit, not playing, but based abroad, got invited to the squad for competitive games. Whereas guys that were scoring goals in the Veikkaus Liga didn't get the call up. And you think, well, it's because of that segregation between the domestic league and the kind of international players or based abroad players that we have this problem that undervalues the Veikkaus Liga as it is. And I think there's a lot of easy ways to solve it. I think it's just to go back to basics and say, look, this is the best squad we have. And if you call people up and they don't go, put it in the paper.
and you can see then more of a balance between form, Veikkaus Liga players fitting in alongside the fit and regularly playing overseas players.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just, we just need to win. And we need to get that fit, sort of that feeling where we need to beat, it's Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. We need to go and beat them. And it doesn't sound, you know, I know it sounds kind of really simplistic, but there's nothing begets winning like winning.
Alicante in the message board there is saying the international team should use hot players. I presume he's talking about form rather than, you know, the sexiest Finnish players. Yeah. Unless you've got a favourite, Alicante.
I don't want to see that Nicky Mampa photo again. Man. No, but I mean, it's... Go ahead.
I was just going to say about Mampa. He, you know, he's gone to Brighton. There'd been so many rumours about his career, and you know, he's gone to Brighton. And last week he played in their under 21s. Again, you know, it's harder with a goalkeeper, but goalkeepers need to play regularly. Goalkeepers need to play, and we talked about it before with a stockpiling of players at clubs, where, you know, a goalkeeper is, their whole role is based on confidence and momentum and technique. And if they're not sure of a game, you know, that's why Hradecki's done so well. You know, he was getting regular games at Brøndby, now in Germany, and playing against Lewandowski and Aubameyang and players like that, and he's playing well against these big teams. You know, he deserves to be number one. Maybe not, as Alicante suggests, on an attractiveness scale. But, you know, he is playing in the Bundesliga and playing well. He needs to be the number one goalkeeper. And, you know, it's the same with any player. If they're not playing regularly, if they're, you know, on teams, B teams, and on loan and not getting
that,
games.
The Northern Ireland game, you know, that we lost 2-1 in Belfast.
Going into
the starting
centre
backs was Moisander and Toivio. Moisander at the time, it was March. So Moisander was kind of being phased out by De Boer because he was getting too old, and Ajax don't pay contracts to 29-year-olds anymore. And Toivio had been off because the Norwegian season doesn't start till April. And he'd finished in November. So he'd won the league and he was in good form at the end of last year, but he hadn't kicked a ball competitively for 4 months. And they put him in against Northern Ireland. And who was the big lad? The big... Yeah, this Lafferty had his way with him. Just absolutely Lafferty. Just jumped, ran all over him.
Well, the Irish fella.
I can't... Like, Johan Otávio is a guy that I personally like a lot, because but he gets a lot of the stick for being an unintelligent defender. And at times he can be, but... It's also not his fault if he gets put in after not playing for 4 months competitively against somebody like Lafferty, who's you know, at Windsor Park in front of his home fans, having already scored. I think he'd already scored 4 or 5 by that point. It's a kind of a brainless decision, and it's right. It follows on for foreign players, because I mean, we had, you know, a lot of guys. We had 4 guys banging the goals in, and Pukki wasn't one of them, and yet Pukki started every game under Miksu. I think that I saw, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Barbarian. Maybe somebody tweeted a picture of Miksu when he made his debut, I think at Dundee, and he had at the time like long flowing blonde locks and a bit of a like short as stocky build. He looked the spit double of Teemu Pukki from his Schalke days. So I think there could have been a bit of that, but it's true. That's definitely one of the things as well that we need to work on when we go forward, just picking the guys who are scoring the goals.
Before we started recording today, Mark, you mentioned about the getting the players and the agents kind of in the right,
That's my biggest source of anger with Finnish football at the minute. I mean, when Eero Markkanen went to Real Madrid, and I mentioned this a little bit last time, so I don't want to go on about Eero, but it wasn't a step up in his career in terms of football. I mean, even if you think about when Teemu Pukki left Schalke, he had to leave Schalke because he needed a new club, and he went to Celtic, and at the time I thought it was a great move. But Then Neil Lennon went out and said that he was brought in basically to replace Georgios Samaras. Samaras played again as a target man, and so you're thinking, that can't be right. It can't be right that you want him to be that sort of lone striker. And so what happened is what has happened with Demo since Schalke. He went up top as a lone striker. It didn't work out. He got a couple of goals, nothing spectacular, and they shunted him out on the wing. And it's a bit... Sakkari Mattila, captain at Ålesund's mid-table Norwegian league, doing really well. Got the dream move to Fulham. I think he's played 3 times this year. You know, Tim Vauranen, he's been bouncing around. And Mikko Sumusalo as well. They've been bouncing around the German lower leagues and regional leagues for a couple of years. I mean, there's not enough football in the decisions that are getting made. I mean, even like Berat Sadiq, a lot was made about Berat Sadiq last year, and he was on fire for Thun because Thun played really simple 4-4-1-1. They had one guy in behind him that had a lot of creativity, and they had two wide players and fullbacks that could hit diagonal balls. And he was the basic, your classic target man. And I think he got, again, the same thing, 13-14 goals in the Swiss League. They qualified for the Europa League, and he left. He went to Krylia Sovetov, if I'm absolutely pronouncing that wrong, in Russia. And they play, I've watched only a handful of their games. They play like a really deep 5-3-2. They don't put any wide balls in. He's expected to take the ball and hold it up and then redistribute. And he's not scored. I think he's played something like 10 games. He's not scored. And you can see why, because he's not getting into the areas where he normally scores from. He's not kind of, they're not playing to his strength. And so you think when he was signing the deal, did they know? Like, were they told that this is how we play? Because, I mean, for sure, I didn't know how Krylia Sovetov played last year when they got promoted from the Russian First Division. But there's not enough, like, football planning going into the moves and the transfers that are being made. And I know it's a hard thing. But, I mean, the way I look at it, this Finland doesn't have enough players to get it wrong. You know what I mean?
Rich Keke in the message board is saying that Markkanen would be number one striker for Finland by now if he had not gone to Madrid.
Yeah, he would be. He was a top player. I mean, he still is a top player. He's a huge guy. He's good on his feet. He's surprisingly quick. But they just think the Spanish third division is, even if it's under the badge for Real Madrid, it's just nowhere to prove yourself. I mean, don't get me wrong, he got rich out of it, that's for sure. Him and Luthi, kind of the agent, they would have got a lot of money for it. And I don't begrudge them that either, but there should be something in place inside the national side that says, like, I'm not sure that that's the right move for you. Money talks, says Alicante. It does. It does. It does. But this is the thing. Right. We can't afford it. Finland can't afford that.
But it's like, you know, you look at football now to where it was 20, 25 years ago, where Littmanen stayed in Finland until he was 21, you know, playing, winning championships. You know, he was playing while doing his army service as well. And, you know, he was already then an adult male, a full-time professional footballer, and then spent a year in Ajax's, I wouldn't say he was in the reserves for a year, but, you know, he spent a year slowly learning under Van Gaal, and he replaced Bergkamp. And all of a sudden, you know, admittedly circumstances were different, but if Littmanen came out now, at 15, 16, he'd be snapped up by someone. And if we're lucky, he may have made it. And, you know, quality-wise, yes, he would. But you think, you know, humans are so, the different sides of their character, where some people will flourish in being in a reserve league and a B-side. Some people won't. And, you know, it's nice to have the money to fall back on and the agents to get rich, but, you know, I genuinely worry that, you know, Huapia, Littmanen may not have made it if they, you know, on talent, yes, absolutely. But if football,
it's a bit of a lottery, isn't it?
Football is as it was now.
Do you think that this phenomenon of the players going overseas much younger somehow distances them from the fans? I wonder if you guys that are actually listening on the message board, Juspe, Keke, Alicante, Stiuge, if you guys think that there's more distance between the everyday fans and these young players nowadays. I remember seeing this YouTube video of Pohjanpalo when he came on and scored a very quick hat-trick and he was 16 years old. And that was the last thing I heard about him until recently when I actually bothered trying to find out what he was up to. And it's from what you're saying, that's not a rare occurrence either.
No, I mean, Pohjanpalo, he did stay with HJK for another 18 months or so. Leverkusen, it's a strange one because do they have first option on him? But he's on loan at Fortuna at the moment. He was at Arlen last year or the year before. And, you know, these big clubs, and they're not even, I'm sure some of them are watching Vegas Liga and Ukan and games, but they're watching these kids at, you know, the under 15, under 16 national team tournaments. You know, you think the under 18s are playing in a tournament in St. Petersburg next month. 3/4 of that crowd will probably be scouts, and the other quarter will be agents thinking, here we go. You look at Kaiden, and, you know, 16 years old, plays for Inter Turku, just coming through. You know, he's played a few times towards the second half of the season, technically very, very good. And he's had a trial with Tottenham. He's at Juventus this week. You know, these aren't necessarily trials. These are, he's training on and he's wearing the kit and he's having a, you know, will it make him a better player? Who knows? But, you know, you've got to hope that there's some level for the sake of the national team as well, that he plays regularly in a team that suits him and he develops properly. But still, he's only 16 years old. I mean, when I was 16, you know, going to a foreign country and a foreign culture and a completely different way of life. You know, I don't know what the support structure is going to be like at Juventus.
Yeah, but and I mean, think, it's not like SUK and HJK, Hoyko, they've kind of shown that there's a map, there's a place, like there's a pathway to Europe. You know what I mean? And it, for me, it would be far better for for the Finnish talent to stay with Hoiko, to get maybe two or three Europa League games, get us to a group stage. I mean, Finland's kind of golden generation, Lipmanen and Hupia, that came from the, I think it was it 93, 94, when they went to the Champs League group stage, something like that. Forsell was there. I think Chef Kikuchi was still there. There was probably about 5 to 10 players that kind of got transfers after that achievement. And I think there's no problem. If you're a player and you play hard and train hard and then you achieve something and then you get recognized and move up, that's fine. I think somebody like Jere Uronen now in Sweden does brilliant in Helsingborg. He can move up. He's you know, played a good couple of seasons. He's been reliable. He's good going forward. He's good going back. He can score goals. You know, it's fine for him to move on. But I mean, like Joel Mero went to Werder Bremen, was put down to the youth team or the B team, and then again farmed out on loan a couple of times. He's been unlucky with injuries, but you think he's one of the, defensively, he was one of the hot prospects, and now he's got a long road back to get anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jusper in the comments has just talked about Robin Lud.
Mm.
You know, Panathinaikos was certainly a different move for him. But he's, you know, he was
for Lud, I've got a little bit of a different opinion, because the manager got sacked, you know, I think three games ago. And he went to Panathinaikos, he got injured. Yeah, like he played, I think, half a game, and then he got injured, and he was out for about 2 or 3 months. Then he came back, and then the manager changed. And since the manager's changed, he's not got into the team. So I think that kind of thing is maybe bad luck, which you can sort of account for, because that happens in football. I can't. When he went to Panathinaikos, I think there was a place for him in the team, because they came and paid money. They didn't snap him up on a free and then try to fit him in or buy him as a backup player. I think they bought him with an eye to play him, but the manager changed. That happens. Hmm. But
again, he's certainly one who, you know, he spent that extra bit of time playing first team football. He had a loan spell as well somewhere, didn't he? In Finland. I'm sure someone will tell me. But he, you know, matured into that player who became the player of the year, because he had that time, he had the playing time, and, you know, he earned his move. It wasn't based on YouTube or anything like that. You know, it was through consistent quality performances.
We've been going now nearly an hour again. And I know we had on the in our thoughts, Mark, to talk about the World Cup qualifying group and talk about that in a bit more detail. Maybe we should push that to the next episode and come back to that in the new year.
Yeah, well, I think in the new year, I think we've got the Liga Cup and we've got European competition continuing, and there'll be a fair few Hukaya on the move, including some Veikkaus Liga guys. Hope to see Sergei Yarmenko come back. So there'll be a lot. We have time to go through the likes of Turkey and Iceland and all those other guys.
I think another day. It's you know, we've got 9
Yeah, look, yeah, exactly. He's got his Abu Dhabi test coming up.
We'll give Bakker a
chance. It's nice to see that Timo has just joined us, but I'm afraid, Timo, that we're just about to say goodbye and go off the record for a few minutes. So how about if we just sign off now with a reminder from me that the podcast will be out in a few days' time. If you go to your normal podcast player and search for Finnish Football Show, you should find it there. Episode 1 is still there, and you should find episode 2 as well. From me, Mark, at Explore Finland, thanks for joining us again this week. From Mark at FC Suomi.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, sticking your thumb up on an audio podcast.
It's great radio. It's great radio.
And Rich from Escape to Suomi. Yeah, Merry Christmas. And with that, here comes our theme tune.